Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Yeah, just to kind of add on to that, you can find me at Kevin Tachi, T-O-C-C. I got to say, Richard, the breaks aren't long enough. Although, usually you don't want your stop set to be that long because, well, you want to kind of get to your next guest. And we will. Jeff Deal waiting on the line will be joining us in just a moment. But while we're enjoying a little bit of McGuigan's Pub pizza, I want to at least take a moment to recognize that you celebrated an event with a what do you call it, a historical artifact from the town of Whitman. Well, what would you call it?
Either historical or hysterical.
I might lean towards the hysterical.
One or the other. So we brought in, for National Chocolate Chip Cookie Day.
Last Thursday.
It was actually Friday.
But we
did it on Thursday.
Yeah.
So we brought in our 6-foot replica of the Nestle's Tallest Chocolate Chip Cookie that the kids at Social Votech made. So we had it on the stand, and we had a huge crowd of people coming in want to have their pictures taken with a cookie.
Kevin Tachi was one of those people.
And I believe that I've seen something where you've changed your
My profile picture on Facebook
to you with
is now next to the cookie.
It was great. We had a lot of people coming in with little kids that wanted to have their picture taken with it, and it was a fun night. You know, it was a typical fun night at McGuigan's.
Actually, my producer Larry Nelson offered, when he saw the picture, to help me eat the cookie, and he was going to bring milk.
We did have a guy come in that was a little exercised because he had seen the advertisements for the cookie and thought it was real. So I sent someone out into the kitchen to bring him back a couple of chocolate chip cookies, and it was good.
How nice of you.
So, you know, I do want to say one thing before we move
on. Before we speak to Representative Deal.
Representative Calter, who was here.
Yep.
You know, it's admirable what he's doing with the drug awareness stuff. But he and I have a very, very, very close mutual friend. And the story that he told off the air couldn't be repeated. And I just want to give a shout-out to Jack Hurley from Kingston, who is a very close friend of the representative's. And yes, Jack, the representative told the story. So
It was a good story.
It was a great story.
Heck of a way to meet.
It's a heck of a way
to meet.
It really is.
Speaking of meeting, joining us on the phone line is State Representative Jeff Deal, a Pauley Award-winning Jeff Deal. Representative, how are you?
How you doing, Enriched? Nice to talk to you guys both.
How goes the battle?
It goes well. You know, it's funny, Richard, when you were talking about historical or hysterical, I thought you were going to mention that giant rock in the that area you're developing over there on Route 18.
You know, that is not hysterical. That giant rock.
Hysterical at all.
That giant rock.
A big issue to deal with.
I'm guessing. I've been told it's going to cost me about $5,000. See, most people think that I'm in the real estate business. I mean, in the restaurant business, and people used to say that I was Richard Rosen from Rosen Realty. The last few years, I've been known more as Richard Rosen from McGuigan's Pub. But you're absolutely right, Representative. That is the largest rock I've ever encountered on any construction site I've ever done.
And I saw them scraping it away. If anybody doesn't know, it's on Route 18, just north of Stop and Shop, and also the tree company. It's who's got the tree company right
now? Elliott Tree Service.
He's got the tree company, and it's right next to that. And I saw them scraping away this what you know looked to be okay. It's kind of a rock, and then you guys had to get it completely excavated. It's this massive boulder.
And the way they're going to get rid of it is they're going to crack it with another rock. They're going to lift. It's pretty interesting to watch them.
I thought they'd do something like, you know, hot water, cold water, you know, make it crack or something. I don't know. Well, that's, anyway, I'm sorry. I'm getting way off on topic because
But you're talking Route 18. Well, I think we could talk a little transportation, seeing that you are a member of the state's, at least the House of Representatives. Is it the House of Representatives Transportation Committee?
Committee and Housing Committee, yeah. So, I was on the oversight for the, obviously everybody knows the problems at the T. And. Just a few weeks ago, we had the oversight hearing with Stephanie Pollack, the new Secretary of Transportation, and even Keolis came in, and we had, you know, oversight on that. So that's been a big issue, and I think, you know, anybody who was in Massachusetts for this last winter, I mean, nobody's going to forget the mountains of snow, and really anybody from the region that takes the T in and out of work or the commuter rail from our towns is not going to forget, you know, the massive problems to get to and from work, and. So what we're trying to do with the State House is obviously make changes to the way that the T operates, make changes to the way that, you know, management takes care of it. And so the new governor who came in, Charlie Baker, has obviously been, you know, taking on the responsibility of that. And what he's asked for in the, both the House and Senate is to make some changes where not only does the MBTA have some changes, but MassDOT, so their board would increase from 7 members to 11 members, and he would be allowed to appoint the general manager, which previously that's, you know, the legislature and the governor have not been able to, you know, have that oversight. They tried to create a separate entity, and so now they're going to give him that power. The other thing he's asking for, though, directly for the MBTA, is to create a control board that would actually take care of not only financial but management decisions and allow that three members he appoints, but a 5-member panel to have about 3 to 5 years of direct control over that, over the T. And the same thing he wants to do at the same time, and what he wants to do is do a temporary restriction or lifting of the Pacheco law, which would allow some privatization to happen so that they can at least just get some temporary sort of lower cost services in place to turn it around. I mean, if anybody knows that the T, back in 2009, there was a DeLisandro report that said that there was about $3 billion plus of maintenance backlog, and that's grown to $6 billion, and that's really had a direct effect on how we're able to operate during the winter storm. And so this is going to at least be a step in the right direction towards correcting that.
So I guess I would ask you, as far as where do things stand as far as the control board, has that had any movement? Where does it stand at this particular time? Has he appointed people to that control board, or are these things that are in motion?
Yeah, so what happened was that was attached to the budget this year in the House, and so the House actually passed pretty much as he requested it. Mm-hmm. It's hit a snag in the Senate where the Senate has put taken out the control board and has also rejected the lifting of the Pacheco law. And so that's really where the debate is now lying. And in fact, debate starts tomorrow up on Beacon Hill for the Senate.
Yep.
And I think you're going to get some, probably going to be dealing with it pretty quickly, probably tomorrow or the next day, because I think they want to try to resolve this. And so that control board is part of that decision as well. And so that's where, you know, the Senate President, Stanley Rosenberg, as well as Transportation Chair Tom McGee, seem to have, you know, some differences with the House version. What could happen is they could pass it without those two in there, and then it goes to conference committee, and when they iron out the differences between the House and Senate, they may put those back in or allow it to come out with the control board and the temporary lifting of the Pacheco law. But, you know, you can't really tell until we get past the Senate version. So I think people should keep an eye on the what's going on in the Senate. And you know, I just think, you know, my own personal take is let's give the, if the governor's pretty much going to be judged on this, on how well he can turn the T around in the next few years. And I think he's asking for, and has been pretty fair in asking, you know, for controls that would allow him to, you know, make the major changes that are necessary. So hopefully they'll come around to that, but we'll see.
Now, I know something else that you wanted to talk about. I know you and I had talked about possibly restoking the conversation about the toll road on Route 3. Have any updates to that conversation? Have you had a chance to take a closer look at that and have any conversations as to, is there a direction for it? Is it just something that's just being thrown out there for the public to judge? What's going on with it?
Well, it's not actually, you know, the funny thing is it actually hasn't been put out for public debate yet. And this is what sort of troubles me about the process is, you know, they end up spending quite a bit of money getting to the point where they're going to ask the public their opinion, and by the time the public weighs in, it potentially could be, you know, fairly well invested into the point where they want to keep going forward. But some of the basic facts are, for people who don't know, MassDOT was looking to potentially create what are called, you know, toll lanes and on Route 3 to alleviate the traffic up, you know, from sort of the South Shore area up to the Braintree split. Total project estimated somewhere around $800 million, and the miles, it's about 17 miles of road. So if you just do quick math, it's about $47 million per mile project. And what they were thinking was they would do a public-private partnership, a PPP, where you know, they would get a company to come in and do the project for them, and then in exchange they would be allowed to put tolls on the road for a period of time. And this would alleviate the traffic. I mean, I think everybody knows Route 3 to and from work on regular work days can be tough. Forget with the storm that we just had. But, you know, and so there's, you know, there's some merit to adding lanes. But the other problem is, I'm not sure, I think from what I understand, there's not a lot of positive reaction to adding tolls to that. Some people think that they should just put lanes in as they would, you know, maybe any road that needs just to be expanded. I mean, they're doing a widening of Route 18 right now down through Abington. So, you know, maybe that's what's called for. But, you know, I ran some other numbers on this as well. And the fact is that the state, well, here's an interesting thing. So there was a hearing that just for lawmakers and some advocacy groups a few months ago.
It was in Hingham, right?
There was what's called an MPO, which is a Metropolitan Planning Organization meeting in April. Late April, and they brought it up and had discussion on it. And some of the concerns I found from that was that the state is still going to have to maintain the cost of the roads, meaning it won't be the private entity that just builds the roads and maintains them during that period of time. The state will maintain them. And if anybody remembers the gas tax ballot question discussion, we maintain our roads at four times the cost of any other state. And so 17 miles times $675,000 a mile is about $11.5 million a year we would still be spending to maintain that section of road.
Jeff,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Before you go on and we're finished,
yeah,
I have a couple of questions. Where does an idea like a toll road on the South Shore even come from? Because, frankly, a lot of silly things go on at that state house. But in my opinion, that's one of the most absurd I've ever heard, especially after you've explained it. It's absurd.
Let me put a few more facts out there, and then I'll try to answer that. So the state, by the way, bears the cost of the planning for this project, which is $38 million. So that's not even thrown into the mix for the private partnership.
But where does it come from? Who comes up with an idea like this? It's just...
Yeah, just two other quick things. There is no plan to fix the Braintree split right now, and this would dump into the Braintree split. So this is really even jumping way ahead of what they need to do, which is plan to figure out how the Braintree split can be figured out. And then, and of course, the other thing is they want to put a toll bridge, potentially a new toll bridge down at the Cape. So there'd be like sort of two new tolls. So, Richard,
brilliant idea.
Where does this come from?
It's just so stupid. It's not even funny.
What's that?
It's just an absurd idea.
It is. And, I guess I have to say, okay, good. At least maybe they're thinking outside the box of trying to bring other money in to get projects done, but in this case, it's a road, and the state's usually kind of the most adept at building roads. If we're going to maintain it anyway, we should just build it. And I think my personal gut feeling is that there's groups out there that want that. I mean, let's just, I don't know how to say this. There's groups out there that are looking for work. People who maybe want to do engineering and planning projects and. And what they'll do is they'll plan this, and it'll cost us a certain amount of money to plan it, and then they stick it on the shelf and say, well, we'll touch it later. In fact, Old Colony Planning Council said that there's already been a proposal that was years ago put together for a similar type of thing, and they shelved that one. So we're sort of like doing volume two, and we're just going to continue to create a bookshelf of ideas of how to do this and never really act on it.
If I could ask a representative, again, we're speaking with State Representative Jeff Deal. We're representing the 7th Plymouth District. And we're talking with him about the Route 3 possible toll road. It's, I believe the toll road is not, it's not a new concept for that corridor, that this was something that was discussed previously, correct?
That's right. There was actually discussion years ago for this. And, right, and again, right, they sort of determined it was not the way to go back then. I think we're looking at a similar situation where it's not, like, the cost is not going to be right. The way it would be implemented, mm-hmm, is not right. And I think people need to judge it for themselves. There's been a few articles written about this. But the other thing is people can go to the state website. It's actually www.ctps.org. They can go there and try to look up this project, the Route 3 toll lane project. And they can, judge for themselves based on the notes from those hearings what they think. And then if they really want to go a step further, they can ask the people at the MPO, the Metropolitan Planning Organization, why they think this should move forward. And the number for that, just in case people have a pen in handy, is 857-702-3676. And that's on that website as well, so if they want to look that phone number over there, ask them, why do they think this should go forward? I mean, we've heard from, I think you've heard probably from Rep, I think Cantwell's made notes on this. I've heard several reps, Dave DeCoste.
Yep.
I think they've all said that they have major concerns about this. And I know we brought it up with a meeting with the governor last week, and he said, why would they even be thinking this? And I said, well, not sure. It's got to get on your radar soon, so hopefully you'll look at this and maybe redetermine whether you want to go forward or not.
I would think a majority of your constituents, well, first off, you probably don't have any constituents who are anywhere near, but I'm sure anybody that knows who you are, and any time that you bring this up, usually has some kind of a negative comment about it, no?
Well, you know, the thing about it is, that Route 3 is used by a lot of people. It's not necessarily who lives along the coast. It's used by commercial drivers. You know, plenty of people use that. So I think it really affects all legislators in the whole South Shore area. I was surprised when they had the first sort of public hearing, and it wasn't public. It was for legislators. They actually only included a handful of legislators, and I really think it's a bigger regional thing than they're thinking. Hopefully, you know, again, this isn't going away. It's something that they seem to, you know, be pushing, and I think you're going to see a bipartisan pushback on what's going on with that.
Jeff, you had brought up a minute ago the Route 18 widening project. So here is a perfect example of how things operate in our state. So I was in the, and frankly, I don't know what the status of the Route 3 project is, and I'm going to ask you that in a second, but I can tell you this much, that in 1983, when I was elected, I was on the Board of Selectmen, I was like three.
In Whitman, right?
In Whitman. Yep. We were talking about the Route 18 widening project then. So that's 32 years ago they were talking about this project. So I'm just curious, and it was talked about long before I got elected in 1983, and now you mention it. So what is the status of the Route 18 widening project 30-something years later?
Yeah, 30 years later, I guess. Maybe in 60 or 80 years, who knows, we might reach that big rock and be able to pull it out for you, right?
Well, that's my point. If you get down there quick, you can take it. No, I mean, seriously, what is... I mean, it's over 30 years. And
no, I know. So so right now, you know, Route 18 was widened down to Weymouth, and, you know, for the hospital, it widened for access to the hospital. There's now the plan to take it down to Route 139 in Abington. And where that's at is actually it's been engineered as far as how the lane or the widening would go, and what they've done is turned it over to the legal division for MassDOT, which is contacting all the owners, and they're working out the land takings of what they would need to take from, you know, the properties that line there. The only and interestingly enough, there's only one. It's actually a business, not a home, that would have to completely sort of lose their property, which is that stone company right at the bridge, right near the Abington-Weymouth border. And there's a restaurant right there, Main Street restaurant, I think.
But I have when you get further south, when you get into Abington and even into Whitman, there are people that are going to lose a lot of their property. There are houses built literally on the street.
Right. Well, luckily for we're not down to Whitman quite yet. But
now, that'll be another 30 years.
Yeah, the way they've designed it, they've tried to minimize that impact, and so they're saying the only, and again, the stone company actually already had, you know, sort of seen the writing on the wall and looked for a new location, so they're already in the process of relocating themselves. But that'll be the only one where it's an entire taking. The other one will be partial takings, and again, the lawyers are working out the arrangements with each property owner as to, you know, the compensation and how that would go. So and I guess that might best explain why it's such a slow process. Although. It also has to do with funds for the region. I mean, they have to see a need for it. I think the Southfield Weymouth Naval Air Station development sort of necessitated the additional widening from you know, Route 3 down past the hospital and down to that property. And now I think they're seeing that the increased traffic on 18 is really pretty noticeable.
I'm guessing that any of your constituents that drive from Whitman or East Bridgewater to Boston every day see a need for it.
Oh,
because the traffic on Route 18 is absurd.
Yeah, I mean, when they did when the Lowe's went in and they added sort of the two-lane, that turnoff there, that mm-hmm. helped a lot alleviate some traffic in the Abington area. But really, I actually think it could really help straight down to Whitman. Heck, the East Bridgewater, that central East Bridgewater, you know, where all the five intersections are, that's a terrible area. And hopefully, you know, there'd be a widening, how many years from now, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But that would be a way to try to maybe do a master plan for that terrible intersection.
Representative,
Central Street and 18, yeah.
While we had, I don't know if there's anything further you wanted to say about the whole Route 18 widening project, but I want to kind of, while we have 5 minutes left, kind of get your take on the possibility of the Olympics in Boston in 2024.
What do you guys think? I was at the senior center in East Bridgewater this morning, and I asked the ladies playing cribbage what they thought. You know, one said yes, and she said, "I don't care about the cost because I won't be here by the time they come."
Right.
And the other ones all said no, thumbs down. So, what do you guys think?
I think if this committee can put together a perfect plan, it'll still be rejected. But you know why? Because we have too many problems. You have traffic. Who's going to fund this? Is this going to be the Big Dig 2.0? I mean, it's what's going to be left in the wake of it once all the end of the world comes here, you know, and you know finds out that you know the place is just way too small to hold such an event.
If we're talking over 30 years to widen Route 18 in a very short distance, how in God's name does anybody in this state think that they can build the infrastructure between now and 9 years from now to have the Olympics?
It's not even 9 years from now, because by the time we get awarded this thing, it'll be 2017. That'll give us only really more like 7 years to get that thing in order.
It would never happen.
You're right.
You know what? And I am the biggest optimist in the entire world, but I'm also a realist, and I really believe that it's impossible. Especially the way that these guys have come out of the gate. I mean, they've come out of the gate horribly.
Haphazardly.
It's making everybody look bad. I mean, they ought to, as much as I'd love to see it, I think it would be great. They should fold their tent and go home because it's not going to happen. I don't see how it could possibly, I would love to see it. But if you're talking over 30 years to build a widening of Route 18, how are they going to fix the Southeast Expressway to get people into an Olympic venue?
I wish we could make the bid for a future, you know, maybe another 10 years down the road for that, because I agree. I think it'd be a great way to showcase the area. I think it'd be a great way to help make sure that our infrastructure is taken care of. I mean, I think this could be an impetus to fix things up, provide more middle to low income housing in the Boston area with the Olympic Village, provide a lot of construction jobs, you know, immediately for some people that would be working on all the new venues and things that have to be built. But at what price? It always comes down to at what price.
Right.
And the problem is, since 1960, every Olympics has had an overrun of about 180%. So just tack on 80% of what the projected cost is, which is $14.5 billion.
Okay.
And that's what the taxpayers would potentially have to absorb. And it would be a big dig. Big Dig Part 2, we'd be paying it off for another 20, 30 years. And Montreal, I mean, had a horrible experience back in 1976, and they just finished paying off only a few years ago, their Olympics debt. It'd probably be a similar situation for us, because, like you said, I don't think we're prepared to take on the massive. Well, let's just put it this way: London, which has a very mature transportation system, their tube runs you know perfectly, and they still went from a $5 billion Olympics project to $15 billion. And so, that's the kind of thing we're looking at is really. Not being prepared, I think, to handle the amount of people that have to travel through Boston for that whole.
So you don't want to hear this, but back in the day, when Mitt Romney became everybody's hero for saving the Olympics in Utah, or wherever the hell it was, I could have saved the Olympics because they paid for it with $1 billion of our money.
I know.
He's the savior. He's the savior. We paid for it.
It's a great and it sounds like a great story, but you're right. Every Olympics has had a backstop by taxpayer dollars, except one. The Los Angeles Olympics in 1984. I love telling this story because the Montreal Olympics showed that it was really a tough haul. And in 1980, we had the Russian Olympics were boycotted by the U.S., so that didn't happen. So then the only two bidders for 1984 were Los Angeles and Tehran, Iran. And they didn't want to have it in Tehran, where 4 years earlier there was the hostage crisis. So L.A. basically had all the negotiating power, and they said, we're not signing this taxpayer pledge. And what ended up happening was the organizers ran it like a real business, where they didn't expect, you know, they knew they couldn't screw up, so they marketed it, they did a great job with it, and they actually made money. And it's one of the few profitable ones where it never had a taxpayer dollar backstop.
Representative, great conversation, as always. Anything you want to say in closing? We got about a minute.
Yeah, you know, I should plug my website, jeffdiehl.com, and it's GEOFFDIEHL.com. You can catch, you know, what I'm up to there, links to my Facebook page where I try to post pretty much daily what's going on. And, you know, I also link some articles there about current issues like the Olympics, like transportation. So, that's it. Just jeffdiehl.com if they want to learn more. And also, thank you for having me on.
Here he is, State Rep. Jeff Diehl joining us. Thank you, sir.
All right, thanks. And I'll see you, Richie, at McGuigan soon. I should be getting out with the weather not being nice, right?
Jeff, it was a pleasure.
All right, take care.
All right, we're going to step aside, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little about the Kingston Senior Center with Tammy Murray. Don't go anywhere.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.